Crypto is for everyone, not just rocket scientists, venture capitalists, and high IQ developers. Welcome to The Agenda, a Cointelegraph podcast that explores the promises of crypto, blockchain, and Web3, and how regular-ass people level up with technology.
We've all heard it. Money is the root of all evil and sin. And as the saying goes, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. 2022 definitely showed us that crypto and crypto media have an ethics and morality crisis. Today, we're going to dig into just that.
Welcome to The Agenda. My name is Jonathan DeYoung. I'm the senior copy editor at Cointelegraph. And that suave voice you just heard is that of...
Ray Salmond, head of markets and discusser of all interesting topics related to real-life blockchain use and crypto trading.
So, as you may have gathered from that intro, today's topic is yet another one that is, you know, currently a hot topic in the news. Let me be more specific. Let me clarify. Today's topic is the news. That is, we'll be covering the challenge of ethics, objectivity, and transparency within crypto media.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting about this topic. This conversation isn't meant to fire shots at anyone in particular. We realize that in this sector, it's a challenge to be objective and to be transparent and to be clear and to be ethical. In my experience as a journalist at a number of media outlets, those challenges have presented itself. And because crypto is an unregulated space and it's so new and it's so volatile, you know, a lot of things happened in the dark shadows. So I'm looking forward to exploring that today.
Definitely. Now, the elephant in the room, we do work for a crypto media company ourselves. This is a Cointelegraph podcast. Shout out to them. So let me just reiterate that the content of this podcast represents our views and our views alone, not necessarily the views of Cointelegraph. And to help us break down this very important topic, today we are joined by a guest who is another prominent figure. Maybe not another, I shouldn't give myself that. I'm not that prominent. But we are joined by somebody who is another figure, for sure, who is herself prominent within the crypto media space. And that is CoinMarketCap content lead Molly Jane Zuckerman.
So without further ado, here is our conversation. All right, Molly, welcome. Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on to The Agenda.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, let's dig into it. What was your foray into media in general? And after that, I kind of want to hear about how long have you been in the crypto media game? But prior to that, just how did you get into media? Was that what you majored in college and mastered in, and that's where you started your first career?
I actually created, with my elementary school best friend, a newspaper for our elementary school, and we used to have to print it on from floppy disks. That was my first foray into media, like 2003 and four, bringing around floppy disks and printing out my own personal newspaper. But then I, you know, was the editor-in-chief of my high school paper, took a small detour in my bachelor's and master's to study Russian literature and Russian poli-sci, and then came back into media after graduation.
Mm-hmm. Full circle. Mm-hmm. And I guess going back to floppy disks, I don't even know if I can explain that to the listener. I don't know the age of our, like the age of our listener, but those are things that I used to use also. I actually still use them on a few like vintage analog drum machines. They take floppy disk. I refuse to update them to the flashcard reader because like all of my samples and drum kits and all that stuff is saved on floppy disk. So it'd just be like going back and redoing the same thing. But how did the paper do, actually, the floppy disk-based journal? Like, did it have good uptake among the student body?
I'm pretty sure it did. I'm trying to remember what it was called, and I don't remember that. But we would, I mean, it was so cliche. We would, like, review the cafeteria lunches and, I don't know, book reports, discuss our teachers, like, what happened in recess. It was cute.
Your formative roots are that of a journalist.
Yes. Well, my father's a journalist, so I think I was maybe copying him just a tiny little bit with that. Yeah.
where you're wildly successful. So how did you end up in this Wild West space of crypto?
Well, it was December 2017, and this thing called Bitcoin was getting pretty close to $20,000. And I was asking around for some sort of job I could do to earn a little extra money while I was working on my degree, finishing up my thesis. And a friend of mine had just started a new job at a publication called Cointelegraph. And she asked if I could proofread. And then she's like, actually, no. Maybe you could write something. Google Bitcoin and get back to me. And that's really where it all started.
So thank you for sharing that story, Molly Jane. And I can also relate to the floppy disks. I remember as a kid, I used to get floppy disk games from, I think, like pizza boxes, maybe. And I would pop them into the computer and I would play. I remember playing a Mars Attacks game that I was really into on floppy disks, on a floppy disk. And I remember what the game was. I think you were like, it's kind of like a, what's that game where things shoot out of the sky and you shoot them down? It's like one of those kind of games.
Space Blasters?
Yeah, I think it was kind of like Space Blasters, but Mars Attacks version. But it was fun. And I have a lot of fond memories of floppy disks. As we mentioned in our intro, you yourself are the content lead at a major crypto company with a media and content arm. And I happen to know that CoinMarketCap greatly expanded its content during the bull run. So I imagine you had an influx of new staff and there's an influx of new content. And with that, you know, I know how management goes, that comes potentially an influx of new issues as well. So on the topic of kind of ethics and policies, are there any specific policies or practices that you or others have implemented at CoinMarketCap that have been particularly effective? And are there any ones that you would advocate that people across crypto media should implement?
Well, one of the things that we debated with for a while are disclosures when we have authors writing for us publicly for CoinMarketCap's, you know, educational website or our very, very small news team, because we occasionally mention coins, as would make sense because we are writing about crypto. We felt like it might be more fair to our readers if every author had how much crypto they owned. Not that we were going to set a limit or a minimum or anything crazy like that. But yeah, it took about 6 months, I think, before we decided to do so. And everyone was on board, which I was happy about. You know, I didn't make them include their public keys or anything like that, or even the exact amount. I said they could use creative comparisons. Like, I own more Bitcoin than a down payment, or like I own less Ethereum than Hermes Birkin bag sort of thing. So they wouldn't feel like they were being doxxed in any way.
What was the most interesting sort of comparison that you got from someone?
I think I did the Birkin bag and thought it was pretty clever, but I might have copied that from like a Decrypt article or like a Decrypt disclosure. No, hold on. I copied that from somewhere, but I am the most proud of that.
Those disclosures are internal for editorial staff and for editors to review, or do you make those public on the website for anybody reading to know that the writer is invested in a certain coin or token?
Oh, no, they're public. They're in every author bio on the website. Yes.
When you hire somebody to write or edit for you, how do you make sure in the hiring process, like how do you screen people to make sure you're not getting somebody who's getting paid or secretly invested in a project? Are there any particular questions you ask or red flags that you look for?
I mean, it's very, very hard to tell during the interview and hiring process. What is easy to tell is as they start writing for you, what are they writing about and who are they linking to? So unfortunately, it's the kind of thing where you can very easily be led astray just by someone's bio and resume and cover letter. It's only when you start working with them that you could see if they have any sort of leanings. You know, I mean, you do the regular due diligence. You look at their social media, you look at them on Telegram, you know, try to talk to them, get a feel for what kind of person they are in the crypto space. Like, are they a degen in DeFi? Are they like a meme coin day trader? These are kind of people that we would just have to be careful about to work for a company as neutral as CoinMarketCap.
For sure, yeah.
Right. So I want to dial back a little bit because at the start of the show, we said that crypto has a ethics crisis, right? And we didn't really define that before we got into what your background is. So to provide a little color on that for our audience, in 2016 and 2017, initial coin offerings, also known as ICOs, were all the rage. That was the way projects and developers and smart people with good ideas could raise money from the public and from venture capitalists to basically like angel fund their projects, right? And in return for that, you either got an IOU token, which gave you equity in the company or allowed you to have some ownership of the company or make a speculative bet, or no, they were basically all like token allocations. There was really nothing more beyond that. Maybe you could come on as an advisor or something like that. So an interesting dynamic in crypto, and you probably see it elsewhere in finance, but not as prominently as crypto because it's an unregulated space, right? What you'll find in crypto is that a lot of big companies and crypto-oriented finance companies or brokerages or even projects or ICO, people that launch ICOs, own media companies or have a vested interest or stake in a media company. So that creates this kind of flywheel and pressure for that project to get positive representation in media. For example, like DCG owns CoinDesk. CoinMarketCap is owned by Binance. We recently found out that The Block, a prominent and highly regarded crypto journal in the space, was owned by SBF in a way. And the funding that its CEO had received was like not disclosed to all the workers and other people who were senior, like senior leaders or executives in the company. So there's just, I don't know if it's explicit, but there's this kind of shadowy pressure to do what's in the company's best interest. Or there's the public's perception that that exists because crypto companies and centralized exchanges aren't very transparent. So, you know, that pressure that exists is either my perception or the reader's perception, or perhaps employees in the company might perceive that that pressure exists and they walk carefully with what they say, right? So that's one element of creating an ethics crisis. The other is that journalists themselves can go rogue and accentuate their income by working with projects but not disclosing that to their employer, or even just taking money under the table to then mention a project or say favorable things about it or receive payment under the table to like backlink to that project or position it in a positive way. So crypto media itself is also in a way kind of unregulated and not bound by a core set of journalistic beliefs and practices. So that's what we're exploring with Molly Jane today. So Molly Jane, now that we know a little bit more about you, where you're coming from, how you got into this game, are you willing to share with us some of your experiences or things that you've seen while working in crypto, instances of unethical behavior, so on and so forth?
Well, before I touch on that, I wanted to bring up a point is that one of the other things I do and have done for many years now is I was one of the founding members of the Association of Cryptocurrency Journalists and Researchers, which is a nonprofit that included founding members from The Block, from CoinDesk, from Cointelegraph, et cetera. And one of the things that we're trying to do this year, based on everything that's happened over the past few months, is come up with an open source guide on what crypto journalism is. And so that's going to range from like these really big ethical questions like you're discussing here to employee crypto holding disclosures to how you should spell different, you know, crypto exchanges. Should you capitalize Bitcoin? Should you capitalize Ethereum, et cetera? So it is something that is being thought about a lot. And it's something I spend a lot of time thinking about just even outside of my day job is how do we make sure that people working in crypto have sort of a rule book to follow beyond just what their newsroom might tell them. Then going to more specifically talk about the ethics. I mean, I think the issue is if you have access to do something that's so easy for really big money, it can really tempt a lot of people. So I think that even people with very, very high moral standards and very clear ethical boundaries, at least I've seen this in a few companies I've worked for, will purposefully not give them access to parts of the site that would tempt them. Does that make sense? Like if they know that someone would pay them $50,000 to, you know, put a link in, they'll make sure that they don't link anything. You know, it's just sort of these things you have to do because, you know, when you guys pitched this idea to me, it's that there's so much easy money flowing. And so even the most ethical person in the world sometimes has to come up with these little hacks to stop themselves from grabbing what they see as, you know, pretty free money.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So setting up gates to prevent people, it's like the Garden of Eden, right? Like, I think God, what did he do? He told them not to eat the fruit off that tree.
But he still put the tree there. I think you'd have to remove the tree.
No, put a fence around it. Or yeah, remove the tree, I guess, right? But that's I'm wondering, like, is that the best way to go about enforcing a set of standards, is to put handcuffs on people?
No, I don't think so. And I've definitely seen cases in crypto where people are very, very, very ethical. I'm going to mention this. I won't mention his name, but if he listens, he'll know. I have a journalist friend who covers both news and politics and crypto and doesn't even vote in elections because he doesn't want to be seen in any way as having an opinion one way or another. He wants to be the true neutral vessel of journalism, you know, just putting facts that have nothing to do with him or his personal beliefs in any way. That's an extreme, though. That's an extreme case, I would say.
Yeah, that's old school. I think Jim Lehrer, who he's passed recently, but I think him and a few of the like old school news anchors and journalists used to do that, like be apolitical so that it wouldn't impact their coverage or the perception of their coverage and be public about it.
I think the issue that comes up a lot that I've seen is just journalists not necessarily selling links, selling mentions, et cetera. I've seen that way back in like the beginning of 2018, but I really haven't seen that since then or know of any personal cases of it. I think the biggest issue is journalists that have cryptocurrency and not even a large amount of it, can they cover it properly? And some newsrooms think that that's unethical and some newsrooms think that that's totally fine.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you brought that up. I do want to ask you about the ACGR, but before that, I want to follow up on this point, which is that, you know, like you can prevent people from adding links. You could completely erase the ability to add links to any reporter in your content management system. You could ask people to disclose their holdings. You could make them give you their wallet addresses so you can track what they're doing. But at a certain point, you know, in the process of choosing which stories you do and do not cover, people just naturally have projects that they're particularly a fan of. And in the crypto media space, we often want our editors and reporters to be Web3 native, to interact with the protocols, to actually know what they're talking about and have firsthand experience. So when reporters decide on which stories and projects they want to cover, it only seems natural that they would want to cover the ones that they're personally interested in and already know about. And those are the ones that they're more likely to also hold tokens from. So where exactly is the line, you know, where it becomes unethical to write about something that you're personally a participant in, where you would benefit from this coverage if it does benefit the project?
It's really hard. And I know that traditional media like Bloomberg, for example, does not allow you to own cryptocurrency as a journalist working for them.
Do you think that it's any different, though, in crypto media? The rules should be any different?
Well, like I always put myself forward as a special case because I own cryptocurrency because that is how I choose to receive my salary. And I have ever since I started working at Cointelegraph. And so I don't see myself as a trader or even necessarily as a believer when I sell, because I never buy. It's just how I get paid. And so I think that if I ever was going to work for Bloomberg and they asked me about my past and they said, why did you hold all this Bitcoin? I would say I was just trying to pretend it was a dollar and just see how it worked to live like that. I think the answer is it's pretty hard to live like that. But anyway, I put myself forward as this very unique sort of exception to the rule. But in general, I think that while as a journalist, you definitely should understand how the currencies work and play around with them and understand how DEXs work and how swaps work. I think that if you're actively trading cryptocurrency, like very large amounts, I think that could affect your credibility as a journalist. I really do.
So the other kind of thing in the crypto media space that we haven't even touched on yet is that it's not just the traditional crypto media companies, right? So, which I mean is everybody now. These exchanges have media arms, research companies have media arms, analytics firms have media arms, everyone's putting out content. But even beyond that, there's an entire ecosystem of influencers, of YouTubers, and among a lot of those people, there's this zero transparency, zero oversight. Most of them will not tell you whether the token they're shilling is one that they're personally interested in or one that they're being paid to shill. You know, I think it was, I forget if it was a few months ago or last year, there was a big leak of how much certain crypto influencers were getting paid to shill tokens. And I believe that most of those influencers were not disclosing in their content that these were paid shills. And that may make them earn a lot of money, but it also risks if they're pump and dumps, if they're scams, that the consumers of the content lose money as a result. So we in traditional media, you know, we have these large platforms. Theoretically, we have journalistic ethics. Do you think that we have any responsibility to bear to holding scammers and shillers and influencers and YouTubers to the fire when they break the ethics that we want in the crypto space?
I don't think it's fair to hold them to the same responsibility. I mean, as long as they say hashtag ad somewhere in there, then they're doing their job. I think that a really fascinating example of a cryptocurrency influencer turned citizen journalist this year is Tiffany Wong, who sort of came out of nowhere as this Celsius creditor who lost a lot of money in Celsius and started just becoming this person that people with any sort of alpha about wrongdoing in the crypto space would go to, which she would then tweet. And she got that infamous interview with Sam Bankman-Fried that she put on YouTube. And she has said many times, I'm not a journalist. People just want to tell me things. I think that's just a really fascinating example of doing something good. But in terms of crypto YouTubers, like I know there have been lots of investigations into some of the biggest crypto quote unquote influencers and the tokens that they shill, and then Zach XBT will find their wallet and see when they sold and it was during their live streams. Like that is when it starts to get murkier to me.
Do you think then there's also the risk of like it turning into a witch hunt if we try to really police what individual people are doing? Or maybe we think that someone's getting paid and they're not, and we ruin their lives because we go after them and they're actually not doing anything unethical?
Yeah, I think that not everything is black and white. I guess I can share this example about an unethical situation that turned out, at least as I found, unless I was completely bamboozled, to be actually fine in the end. But I have a few freelance writers writing feature stories for me, and one of them, you know, occasionally would suggest a project himself, and I trusted him enough to do that. I would make sure it was, you know, worthy of being included in our hot topics, and we would include it. And a different writer had reached out to me with a message on LinkedIn, a screenshot from that project's team, where the project had offered him money to write about the project for CoinMarketCap. And I got pretty scared because a different writer of mine had just written about that project. And so I reached out to him and he said, funny story, I actually just think this was a really cool project, had pitched it to you, had written the article, and then they reached out to me to pay me to write about them. And he showed me his response. And his response was, you guys, you're so dumb. Like, I thought you were really cool. And so I was writing about you. And now you're offering me money that I'm going to turn down. And it makes you look really bad. And like, again, unless this was like super, super deep fake Photoshop of these LinkedIn messages, I do believe him. And we ended up, I think, not including that project in our story of like, I think it was like the biggest sports coins or something like that. Because the project shot themselves in the foot. Like, they had a really interesting use case, interesting enough that one of my writers wanted to write about it organically. And then by offering him money, they ruined it for themselves. So that's my one story I think I can share.
Damn.
Yeah. One of the worst things I remember, I was talking to a team that wanted me to write about their project. I occasionally would have phone calls about this sort of thing because I do a little bit of partnership and media outreach. And their project, again, it sounded so cool and they did so much educational content. And I was thinking of ways to work together because they really just had some like really interesting explainers and video guides. And at the end of the call, the woman was like, I'm so excited to work together. I'm positive this is going to make our coins price go so high. And I was like, well, I can't work with you anymore. Why did you say that?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Goodbye forever.
So as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, and I want to jump back to this now, you and some colleagues a couple of years ago founded the Association of Cryptocurrency Journalists and Researchers, mm-hmm. also known as ACJR. And you mentioned that part of what you're doing is to work on a standards guide, which does include some style rules. I'm a fan of the idea of the organization. I think what you're trying to do is very important. And I was in conversation with somebody maybe a year and a half ago about helping out with the style guide aspect. But I know that because we capitalize Bitcoin in all instances that I probably would be banned.
No, I do too. I do too. And I'm going to have to fight hard for that.
I hate when I see Bitcoin uncapitalized at other journals. I'm like, it's a formal noun and it's a currency. But I get it. Some currencies aren't capitalized, but it's still a formal noun, so it needs to be capitalized.
That's a topic for another conversation. But I do want to ask you more about that, because my understanding is that it's not an enforcement body. It's like recommendations for how things should be done. So really, correct me if I'm wrong, but the standards that you would set are going to have to be run on the honor system. And as we've established, honor is not something that everybody actually has or respects in crypto. So what realistically can a group like the ACJR do to fix these issues in crypto?
I mean, I think the first thing to do is sort of shine a light on them. I don't think that we're setting out to try to create the be-all, end-all. Like, this is, you know, like, what is it? Is it E.B. White's Rules of Style and Grammar?
Oh, yeah.
Stark and White, something? I carry that around with me everywhere. That is the most useful book. I don't think that we're setting out, at least right now, to create something of that level of magnitude and importance. I think it's just more about the Strunk and White. I think it's more just about the idea of putting some crypto journalist minds together, putting heads together in one space and thinking like, we've been in this space for a while or for a very long time or for a very short time, depending on who's going to end up, you know, thinking of these ideas. What are the things that would make us feel uncomfortable? What are lessons we've learned? What are, you know, horror stories about people plagiarizing with ChatGPT, for example, when covering things? And so I think that it definitely is going to be a lot about brainstorming. And as I've said before, each newsroom is totally different. You know, you work at Decrypt, you put your crypto holdings in your bio. You work at Bloomberg, you cannot hold crypto. I forget what the other publications are, but like there's such a breadth of what people think is okay and isn't okay. And I think that trying to in some way standardize that could be pretty cool for the industry.
Are there any particular challenges and or successes that you've seen since the foundation of ACJR?
Yeah, I think the biggest success is that people know who we are, which is, you know, and we're still around, which, you know, 2 years later in crypto as a new organization is pretty cool because, you know, we don't have a token. We don't have any plans to launch a token. We have a group chat with over 1,100 crypto journalists, researchers, and marketers right now. And it's one of my favorite things to do every day is see what everyone's chatting about. And especially in this remote work environment where I haven't seen my colleagues in 6 months and some of them I've never seen, it's cool to have that sort of online water cooler conversation constantly going about what's going on in journalism. In terms of what I wish we'd accomplished more of, it's sort of the back end of that coin. I want to see people more. I think we should definitely have more in-person events. You know, I met Jonathan in person at a New York ACGR meetup. I think there are a lot of journalists very global. You know, our new board has people in America, Taiwan, Singapore, and Australia. So if we can get those journalists in a room somewhere in each of those countries, that would be pretty cool.
I just want to say, well, that meetup was great, and it was a pleasure to meet you in person. I did get COVID that night. I don't know if it was from that meetup or just NFT NYC in general, but I did walk away with COVID.
NFT NYC was just a COVID breeding ground.
It was awful.
Yeah, I didn't get COVID that night, if that helps.
Thank you.
It was me.
You're one of the lucky few.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to turn our attention and this discussion in a different direction. In 2021 and 2022, Web3 was all the rage. And the core ideology of Web3 aligns with the original ethos of cryptocurrency. Now, in my experience, in regards to intellectual property rights, revenue share, equity in a company, democratization, and governance of company actions, most crypto media still operate like Web2 companies. Even though we're at the forefront of the Web3 movement and our media coverage espouses and advocates for Web3, kind of like for a Web3 favorable workplace and culture. In my opinion, it's a bit of an oxymoron. So, Molly Jane, what sort of transformation do you see occurring over the coming years? And what type of catalysts do you think are necessary to push crypto media companies to become more, quote unquote, Web3?
So I actually think that Cointelegraph is one of the most Web3 media companies out there, not to promote your own your own outlet here, but the fact that they have now allowed you to mint each article as an NFT, it's so clever because you take a legacy crypto media like Cointelegraph that's been around for a very long time and that is known, excuse me, more for its pictures than its journalism a lot of the time. And so what do they do about that? They decide to put even more emphasis on their really cool pictures by making it possible to mint the entire article as an NFT. It's just something unusual. It's something I've not seen done before. And it definitely makes it just seem like it's a company that's not writing about Web3 while still being very Web2. I think another example is Decrypt. They have their own coin. You know, the coin is not worth anything. It is just a loyalty coin for reading, but they also have every single article uploaded to IPFS as well. And then the third example is CoinDesk, which also has its own coin called Desk, which hasn't fully found its niche the way that Decrypt's coin has, but at least they're trying to do something. So with these three examples in mind, I think that if crypto media wants to be more inventive, they need to think a little bit outside of the box, as cliche as that sounds. I mean, you do see non-media outlets, but blogging platforms like Mirror XYZ that are literally on the blockchain, where, you know, articles themselves are basically NFTs because of just the way that they're written and the way you have to use a wallet in order to actually basically post and comment. So these are the things I think are interesting. Has any really caught on yet? I know, probably not. But these are the things where if you are a content creator or an editor in a media outlet and you want to do Web3 things, this is where I would look for inspiration.
Interacting with the blockchain, interacting with cryptocurrencies, experimenting with NFTs as a company that works in the Web3 space is important. I agree with that 100%. I think it's awesome that a lot of people are experimenting with it and like trying to ideate new ideas. And like all of cryptocurrency, finding traction is still a challenge. Finding users for the use case remains a challenge throughout the cryptocurrency sector. But I do feel like Web3 is more than just technology and experimenting with the technology or being technology literate. I personally feel that Web3 is also kind of like a movement to equalize pay among workers, to increase transparency between consumer and producer, or employer and employee, or creator and fan, performer and fan, entertainer and broker. You know, I think it's meant to kind of clear up a lot of the middlemen and exploitation and lack of transparency there. And Web3 is also meant to either, I kind of feel like it's meant to democratize and lead to kind of like more sharing of equity or profits. Like writers are writing, writers are doing the bulk of the work. And now writers' articles are being transformed into NFTs, which generates revenue for whoever created the contract or whoever owns the IP rights. But writers don't get any rev share from that. Writers don't get any kickbacks from that. Writers don't get any royalties from secondary sales, right? Writers, basically, whatever they create belongs to the company, which is a very traditional, like, that's the traditional sense of the relationship between worker and employer. I guess we would say that it's Web 2. So I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts, visions, or dreams about how could there be perhaps a closer relationship, something that's a bit more equitable and perhaps democratic between people that work in crypto media and the companies that thrive off their creations?
So if you want a really great discussion on that question, I would actually suggest getting me off of the podcast and getting Mitchell Moos on instead, the CEO of Crypto Briefing. I'm going to butcher what he does. So I'm not going to get this exactly right, but I know that with his team of writers, they do have skin in the game with a very complex bonus fund that has to do with how the markets work. It's like they all put, They all put money into it if they want to, and then it goes right into Bitcoin or something. Anyway, it's all about making sure that you feel connected to the markets, you understand how to play with the markets, and that your job is somehow connected to the company in a way that normally only like someone with stock options would have. That's probably a very bad example of what you're talking about. I mean, when it comes to Web3, honestly, I think the term is a little bit fluffy, and so you can make it what you want of it. You know, you spoke a lot in your question about Web3, meaning like salary transparency and more equity for all. That's just not my definition of Web3. My definition of Web3 is taking things that are Web2 and making them decentralized. To me, salary and new ways of work environments don't really fall under that bucket in my interpretation.
I think that's fair. No, I think that's fair. And we could probably talk about it all day, because when I think of Web3, I think about also, yeah, like making that transition into a more digital space, but with that, leaving behind some of the things that define you in a physical space. So as creators in Web3 environments, you know, it's grassroots and they connect directly with, you can basically create your own network, your own ecosystem, and cut out the middleman and connect directly with who your consumer, who your customer is. And people want to do that for certain reasons. And I think a lot of those base reasons connect to their experience as workers or in cogs in a wheel of a corporate system. But I also agree with you, like there's many definitions of what Web3 is, and my interpretation of it doesn't, I think, fully align with what the kind of like consensus definition is.
That's the beauty of it, right? You can sort of make it up as you go along. Feel like this is Web3.
So one of the ideas, the Web3 company of the future that you hear floated around, is this idea that we're all going to be working in the metaverse one day. That's the future. So you don't buy into that? You don't want to be sitting around with a VR headset somewhere in Decentraland or the sandbox?
No. I think eventually most people are going to want to get off of electronics and back into real life. A switch will flip. And I think it has flipped for a lot of our generation, which is we don't want the life, which is work a 9-to-5 on your computer,
come home or change rooms and then watch television from 5 to 9 and then go to sleep. I think people are searching for something for more meaning in life beyond a screen. And I don't think the answer is like bigger screens and better screens and like more screens. In terms of working in the metaverse, the one thing I will say I really liked is there was a little avatar-like non-blockchain metaverse that CoinMarketCap hosted our online conference in the spring called Gathertown. And I loved having a little office in there. And for building a project like that, where I was building an online conference and needed to work with a lot of people from all over the world, I liked chilling in my little Gathertown office. And then, you know, the map builders would come and the events manager would come in the weeks up to the conference and just knock on my little door and talk to me. That made perfect sense to me. But it's a very niche use case.
Yeah, I attended some of the events of that conference and I really enjoyed having basically a little Pokemon character is what it felt like. Yeah, it was fun wandering around and seeing people. I want to ask you about something that another guest we had on a few episodes ago was talking about. This was Adam Levy of Mint, who you may be familiar with. And he was talking about how he runs his podcast operation as a very Web3-centric and forward operation. Essentially, he was talking about how he does every single thing on chain. So the sponsors for the show, he has them purchase NFTs so that the sponsorship is done on chain. His crypto wallets for Mint are all on chain. Every person who listens to the podcast can get a free NFT so he can follow them all on chain. This idea of everything being on chain, radical transparency, which I know you've mentioned is not your vision of necessarily for what Web3 is, but I was wondering, doing like as much as you possibly can on chain, on the blockchain, if that is the future of Web3, how scalable do you think that is? Like, could a traditional crypto media operation run everything on chain, have everything be NFT-sized? Like, is that a realistic expectation for what the future of crypto media and Web3 will be?
No. I'm reminded of, it was a talk given at, I think it was the Bitcoin 2022 conference in Amsterdam. It was someone who was talking about, I think maybe Strike or something to do with the Lightning Network. And they were like, this is going to be the light bulb moment for crypto. Imagine you are in El Salvador and you take a taxi in some rural part of the country. And when your ride ends, the taxi driver asks you for pesos or dollars. And you say, no, 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 I must pay you in Bitcoin. And you take out your phone and you make him take out his phone. And you show him how to download a Bitcoin Lightning Network node. And then you send him some sats. And then he goes on his way. And that is the light bulb moment for him about how easy it is to use Bitcoin. And I remember listening to that and being like, what is he talking about? That's not a lightning moment. There are so many steps for that to happen. Could you imagine being in a village in El Salvador and trying to browbeat a taxi driver that doesn't speak your language into downloading something on his phone to send him money he doesn't understand? We're so far from there being any easy steps for this to happen, except for people that are actually involved, actually invested in experimenting with this technology. To the man on the street and to the crypto media outlet on the street, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
What you've described is a tweet from one of our celebrity staff writers and video journalist called Joe Hall. That's his name. But he evangelizes and spreads the good word of Bitcoin globally and does get people to like download various apps and wallets and then sends them sats or pays for part of, you know, whatever he's buying in Bitcoin. And he's had success and is able to like elicit smiles from the person on the other side of that transaction. But yeah, I think the way that you've described it here doesn't necessarily sound like the future of crypto media, does it?
No, it doesn't. Having to explain something to someone and to pay them back for doing the thing you explained to them in detail, it's not the future of any sort of money. I don't think it's the future of anything.
In a way, this again like connects back to what we talked about at the very beginning and the previous podcast on humans that I heard you on, where you said you're eternally skeptical of cryptocurrency and not necessarily like someone who has drank all the Kool-Aid and is aiming to unattach oneself from the grid and live this life, you know, only using cryptocurrency as the medium of exchange. So what is the duty of crypto media then in helping to catalyze that mass adoption? Because it's still difficult to use cryptocurrency. I think the easiest way I use cryptocurrency optionally and daily if I want is I have the Coinbase card, right? And I use it because you get Bitcoin rewards on it and you can take your salary there. So that's probably the most easy way for me to use cryptocurrency. Aside from that, it's not that easy. And there's not many places that take it. And it's not like, there's not much point for me to be spending cryptocurrency when it's so volatile and speculative and people mainly want to hold it with the hope that it'll be worth more one day. So, you know, what's your take on what is the purpose of crypto media and like ethically helping to catalyze mass adoption?
I don't think it should help catalyze mass adoption. Personally, I think crypto media should just lay bare the facts of what is happening in the space. And I think, unfortunately, right now, if crypto media did a neutral job of that, then most people would probably leave, would probably leave the space because it would just be articles about bankruptcy after bankruptcy after bankruptcy. I'm not saying that I think crypto media or any media needs to specifically focus on the doom and gloom stories, but I do know that trade publications and, you know, niche publications, because they report about only one sector, they obviously act as an advertisement or a supporting that sector by fact that they exist. But yeah, I don't think that any media outlet should ever have a goal being like, let's get more people to use cryptocurrency. I think it should be, let's get more people to understand how it works. But if they understand how it works and hate it, then that's the same positive result to me as understanding how it works based on an article you read and liking it.
That's interesting.
We're here to inform. I think of CoinMarketCap specifically as a neutral data company. We're like the royal family. We can't say anything. We just show you the data. You make up your own mind. And I think that good journalism does the same thing. There are definitely experiments where people have an angle. Like I'm really interested in Protos, how they have, you know, the journalist's own specific angle in there, clearly marked as such. But traditional journalism should be like the royal family. Here are the facts. Do with them what you will.
So how do you balance the need to get people to come to your site? You know, a lot of sites are ultimately, unless you have a subscription service, you know, it's ads, it's eyeballs ultimately that are, it's paying for the site to remain operational. So how do you get people, how do you keep that sort of neutral content interesting and exciting enough to get people to come anyways if you're not going for the more salacious material?
I mean, a lot of people want to go to CoinMarketCap's educational department to understand how to do things. One of our most popular articles is how to connect your MetaMask to et cetera, to this chain, to that chain, to how to connect BNB chain to XXXX chain. These are, you know, as we've just been talking about, it's very difficult to use cryptocurrency. And so having these like very well explained guides is what I do. And again, because I come from an educational content or a service journalism perspective right now after 3 years at CoinMarketCap. For places like Cointelegraph and other crypto media, it kind of is the same thing. I don't think that you guys need to write articles about how to connect one chain to another in order to get views. I think that you're out there to sort of make sense of the events that are happening. So it doesn't have to be salacious, but it just needs to tell people what on earth is going on. You know, when Cameron Winklevoss tweets that Barry Silbert needs to step down, the Cointelegraph article should explain both of the sides. Why does he think he needs to step down? Why Barry doesn't, you know? But it shouldn't take sides. I think that's an obvious conclusion that journalism shouldn't take sides, though.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, the way things are right now, the objective truth is salacious enough.
That's kind of my point. In cryptocurrency, you don't really have to embellish in order to get eyeballs. If you just stick to the facts, your article will be juicy enough.
For sure.
CoinMarketCap doesn't run ads in the same way that other major cryptocurrency media outlets do. Am I correct?
No ads. We've been adless for about 2 years. more.
Wow. Yeah. So I wonder what's your take on that? Because you say journalism and journalist itself should be unbiased, objective, and should not kind of like advocate for the mass adoption or use of cryptocurrency. Just give them the news straight, let people reach their own conclusions, whether it be good or bad, and you've done your job objectively. So what's your take on cryptocurrency ads being placed in media? Because, and I want to like also go back and say that when you watch cable news, CNN, Fox, whatever, even like public news, NPR, all the way down to like your local news, KVU 24 or whatever it might be, they have ads also, right? So, but most of the cryptocurrency ads are obviously crypto and investment and financial technology specific, and they're advocating for you to use that product and mass adoption, blah, 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 blah. They're very compelling or shilly or gamey. What's your view on that? Because it seems like, to me, it seems counterintuitive to being unbiased if the ad placements on your website are actually, you know, promoting that people engage with financial products.
It's just the unfortunate reality that no one wants to advertise in the crypto space except for other crypto people. I mean, unfortunate in that, I mean, one, it's a good business decision for these companies, and unfortunate in that in the sense that two, other companies that potentially would find a market in crypto don't want to touch crypto for regulatory reasons or FUD or, you know, just general, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to understand. I don't want to have any risk in my advertising campaigns. So like you will eventually, if you were running a media outlet, have to make hard decisions about the editorial desk and then your revenue desk. And I think that for crypto publications, they do, the revenue desk wins out a lot of the time. I mean, I assume that all of these crypto companies that are advertising on crypto outlets have been very, very, very thoroughly vetted. It was so long ago now. There was a viral photo. This did happen, of CMC having a giant banner ad for BitConnect. So mistakes can happen.
Hey, all the companies that you said are reluctant to invest in crypto for good reason, many of them did invest in FTX.
They did. And it set us back so many years. Yeah. So many years. Yeah. I mean, if I ran a crypto media outlet, I would say no cryptocurrency ads anywhere on the website, and then it would go bankrupt and I'd have to let everyone go. You know, like, I don't, it's a hard question to answer.
Well, thanks for sharing your view on it. Clearly, I mean, like CoinMarketCap has deep access to equity and funds, so you guys are smart to not do that, and you know, I guess I commend you in that, but it's definitely it's concerning, isn't it?
To get you some closing thoughts before we end this conversation, Molly Jane, I wanted to ask you, for those who may be listening, or if a friend were to come to you and say, hey, I'm interested in getting into the crypto media space, either as an editor or journalist or what have you. Maybe they want to start their own publication. Or anybody here who's been in the space for a while and just maybe could use some advice for their career. How can people keep their head on straight and not get tempted and caught up by the whirlwind of the seemingly endless money and temptation that may investments in their own projects? How do you keep your head on straight and not kind of fall into the trap and the allure of the money, especially during bull runs when it seems to be, you know, flying around so freely?
You just have to be, Cecily, you have to be ethical. It's definitely a lot harder than it sounds to do the right thing. But I think there should just be certain questions that you ask yourself if there's a decision that you are questioning, which is like, would I care if this decision was, you know, written about the New York Times? Would I be comfortable talking about this decision to my boss, to my colleague, you know, et cetera, et cetera? And if you can answer those questions yes, then it's probably ethical. And if you answer those questions no, then stop. Stop what you're doing.
Let me ask you another follow-up question, actually. Is there anything before you got started in crypto media is there any advice that you wish someone had given you that would have helped you in your journey?
I would say just make sure you choose who you work for. You know, just because crypto seems like a bit of a quote unquote wild west, if you want to work in journalism, but you start in PR, make sure you make that switch cleanly. If you want to work in PR and you start somewhere else, just, you know, crypto does have a long memory, and just make sure that you feel comfortable about every place you've ever put your name attached to. That would be my advice for people.
Yeah, I agree. I would have said the same thing pretty much. Don't burn your bridges.
Yep.
And whatever you do, it's on the blockchain in a way, like, because the crypto media sector, all the people that work in it, it's so small. So every action you do has a ripple effect, and you don't want to create like these rippling effects of negativity surrounded around your name in this space, at least not at this time.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Molly, Jane, for joining us. Your insights are highly appreciated. I'm glad I had the pleasure to meet you in person a few months ago. And I know that I live in Brooklyn, you live in Queens, so it's like a million miles away. But at some point, I know we actually talked last time I saw you about getting together, and then I got COVID right afterward. So it kind of threw everything for a loop for me for a while, but we should. I will take you up on that offer.
I'm here, and I have a car in New York, which is basically illegal, so.
Hey, there are a lot of people that want it to be illegal to have a car in New York.
I think having a car in Manhattan should be illegal as an aside, but let me have my car in Queens.
There you go.
Molly Jane, thanks for coming on. It's been an excellent conversation. I don't know if you remember, but a little over 3 years ago, you gave me my start at Cointelegraph. So, you know, we've come full circle. And I think that you helped catalyze and kick off my career. So I am forever in debt to you for that. For our listeners, and there's many of them, and for all the people that follow you at CoinMarketCap, where can we find you? Where can people connect with you if they want to know more about you and keep up with you?
You can find me on Twitter, Molly J. Zuckerman, and that is it. That's all. Not on Mastodon yet, so.
Yeah, that's easy enough.
Pretty easy.
The Agenda is hosted and produced by me, Ray Salmond.
And by me, Jonathan DeYoung. You can listen and subscribe to The Agenda at cointelegraph.com/podcasts or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else podcasts are found.
If you enjoyed what you heard, rate us and leave a review. You can find me on Twitter at Horace Hughes, HorusHughes.
And I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and just about everywhere else at Mad Dope Matic. That's MADDOPEMADIC.
Be sure to follow Cointelegraph on Twitter and Instagram at Cointelegraph.